What's up, nerds? Welcome to the Spoileries, where we take a look back at some of the best and worst fandom films of all time, right here on the Spoilery Podcast Network. Tonight's movie is an 80s cult classic. This film really was ahead of its time in trying to create not just a cinematic universe, a cross-platform multimedia experience from games to comics to albums and everything in between. Only problem was, nobody went to see the movie. It's 1984's Buckaroo Banzai, tonight on the Spoileries. Thank you for joining us. My name is Mason Fields, flying solo in studio tonight, but I've got Mitch joining me on the Zoom tube. How you doing, Mitch?
I'm doing great, my friend. Glad to be here for this fantastic film.
So I'll go ahead and let the listeners know right away. This was Mitch's pick tonight. We kind of had an opening in the schedule, and you know, I was kind of glad he picked something that's been a gap in my knowledge. So this will be the first Spoileries we've done that is a first watch rather than like a million.
Oh, you've
time
never
rewatch.
Seen this?
I have never seen this movie until last week.
Oh my gosh! Oh man, you are welcome. I have opened the door.
Well, I'll tell you,
fantastic 80s gem.
It's been on my list for the last few years. You know, full disclosure, I was born like a year before this movie, so by the time I was old enough to see it, I'd kind of missed it. You know, I'd honestly
you're
never
just making me feel old again. Thank
well,
you very much.
You know,
I was
comes
14
with the territory.
When this movie came out.
Comes with the territory. But no, the first time I don't even really remember hearing of this movie like as a kid. It just kind of missed my age group or whatever. The first time I came across it actually was in the early 2000s reading Ernest Cline's novel Ready Player One, novel much better than the movie. It mentions it in there. And of course, it kind of makes an appearance in the movie, wears the outfit. Yeah. But other than that, I was kind of like, man, they're talking about this Buckaroo Banzai like it was this big deal in the 80s, and I don't know what they're talking about.
It's a sleeper. It was very much like Highlander. Highlander was a sleeper. Like, nobody heard about it. Nobody went to go see it. I actually watched Highlander on a bootleg copy that I got when I was in military school.
Well, yeah, it sounds like it was kind of a slow burn with some of that kind of stuff, you know?
Yes, yes.
But yeah, it was kind of like, you know, so I'd heard about it. Buckaroo Banzai, it kind of stirs up something like, well, that's a pretty unique name or whatever. And then you go look and you're like, Peter Weller? What?
Hell yeah, man.
You know, you think Buckaroo Banzai, and I was naturally thinking, you know, a character of some sort of Asian persuasion. but no, it's about the whitest guy you can find in the,
well,
the mid-80s.
Buckaroo was the child, the love child of... A Japanese man and an American woman, or
oh yeah, no, I'm gonna read the whole intro
right,
card here
down.
In a minute.
Right,
yeah.
So he doesn't have to be completely looking Japanese or Asian in any way, shape, or form. It just has to be hinted, you know. And
exactly,
he throws a couple of arigatos out there, and you know, he's half Japanese.
Yeah.
All right, that's cool.
You know, a little headband action. You know, it was.
But that was the 80s. 100%.
100%.
Everybody was wearing that stuff. Everybody was all the ninja culture was around the whole nine. I mean, it was like, it was crazy.
Well, that's what I loved about how much it's really just owning what it's doing, in that it's like, let's just make this guy everything. You know what I mean? Like, he's a musician, he's a surgeon, he's a scientist.
Neurosurgeon. Not just a surgeon, but a neurosurgeon.
A neurosurgeon, yeah. He's like every Avenger in one person, kind of. He's a little Doctor Strange, a little Tony Stark, a little Bruce Banner, all in the mix there. Mitch, tell me what this movie meant to you. Did you see it in theaters when it first came out?
I did. Yeah, I was one of the few that actually went to go see it. So thank you for allowing me to be one of the nobody went to go see it clan. I was one of those nobodies, and man, it again, when I was in teenage, I mean, so I had been going to military school for probably 2 years by the time this movie came up. And so it was a summer, I believe it was a summer release. And it was just one of those, loved it. And you're starving at that point. It's like, you're into video games, you're stealing quarters from your mom and dad's, you know, coin collection or you know, the mason jar with the coins in it, mm-hmm. to go in and get as much of this technology into your brain as you could possibly absorb. I mean, I don't know how many quarters I wasted on Berserker, you know, or Asteroids.
Oh, yeah.
Because I thought that was the I just wanted more. And that's exactly what this movie promised, was that it was like all of this space, scientific, you know, sci-fi, cool shit. And then you throw in the samurai aspect of it, like, done. Because that was another thing. I was taking Aikido at that point. So I was very much into martial arts. And this spoke to me on so many freaking levels.
Oh, 100%.
I loved this movie. And I always have since I watched it. It's so ridiculous. It's awesome.
You know,
I
admire it in a way. You know, most movies like this would, especially at the time, would be like, well, this is, you know, how much will audiences buy? Would have been a big discussion. Like, well, you know, maybe the aliens, but not the samurai stuff. That's a little too much. You know, that kind of thing.
Sure, sure.
These guys were just, no, put everything in and turn it up to 11.
How much will they buy? No, fuck it. Just cram it down their throat, and they're just going to enjoy it whether or not they like it or not. Yeah,
actually push crazy. It to the point where it's so unbelievable that you kind of buy it in a reverse sort of way. Like, well, no, I guess these guys are just the biggest thing that ever, you know, existed pretty much. This double screen thing's fucking me up. All right. So before we talk about the movie, I've got to talk about, since I hadn't seen the movie before, I'm like, okay, I'm going to watch this next week with Mitch. I pull it up on my Amazon deal and I thought, okay, I'll watch the trailer, see what the trailer is all about. Cause I had no sense of what I was going to get into. If this was flying around in space or, you know, fantasy dragons or what. So I was like,
I love that you came into this fresh though. I did not realize that you had not already seen this. So this
other than the outfit, I knew nothing. Other than the outfit, I really knew nothing. But so I hit play on Amazon on the little preview trailer thing. One of the weirdest trailers I've ever seen in my life, because it doesn't show any of the movie.
Right.
What it actually shows, I come to find out, are the clips from the credits sort of scene that they're doing, where all the characters are walking through the LA riverbed. As a trailer, you just see, Peter Weller walking to some music, Jeff Goldblum walking to some music. Okay, what
Clancy
he's wearing
Brown
a cowboy outfit. I don't know what is going on here. And of course, it's got the kind of the theme music to it, but it gives nothing of the movie. It literally has one like 20-second insert of one of the final scenes about, you know, should we blow it up or is it the Russians? No. Or yes to one, no to the other, whatever it was. That is the only piece of the movie that's in there. So I was even more confused after watching the trailer. I'm like, what is this
movie?
Wait,
Russians are involved? Wait, what? What are we doing?
Wait, we're fighting the Russians, but why is everybody in weird outfits in the LA riverbed? Okay, we'll see.
It's the 80s. All bets are off. All bets are off.
One of the least actually descriptive trailers of a movie I've ever seen. So if you're curious
but
about Buckaroo
Banzai. Right. So that's the whole thing. Doesn't it make you go, okay, shit, I want to see what the hell is going on with this. We're bombing Russians. These guys are in a riverbed. What the fuck is going on? There's a dude in a cowboy suit. There's a blonde haired dude with no shirt on and a Don Johnson thing going on. What the hell is happening?
It was mostly Goldblum. It was mostly like if you didn't have a relationship with
Jeff
Goldblum.
He does stand out the
most.
New Jersey stands out the most.
You're like, okay, this is some weird 80s thing, and then Jeff Goldblum walks in a cowboy outfit, and you're like, okay, I got to know what this is about. why is he in a cowboy outfit, and the rest of them seem, okay, we'll see. So that's the trailer. Guys, before we start talking about the development and stuff, I got to read you the first thing that comes on screen in this movie.
Okay.
It is the
epilogue or whatever. It is one of the wildest
prologue slides I've ever seen in film.
Yes.
So I'm just going to read it start to finish here.
Go ahead.
Buckaroo Banzai, born to an American mother and a Japanese father, thus began life as he was destined to live it, going in several directions at once. Okay. A brilliant neurosurgeon. This restless young man grew quickly dissatisfied with the life devoted solely to medicine. He roamed the planet, studying martial arts and particle physics, you know, as one does, martial arts and particle physics.
There's four things right now.
Collecting around him a most eccentric group of friends, those hard-rocking scientists. Hold on a minute. Hard-rocking scientists? Okay.
It was the 80s.
Okay. All right.
There's always going to be a saxophone and a synthesized keyboard player.
Yeah, guitar.
Yeah.
Yeah,
yeah, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, those hard-rocking scientists, the Hong Kong Cavaliers. Okay.
Okay, stop right there. He's got a Japanese father, uh-huh. but his Cavaliers are from Hong Kong.
Okay, very good note. Very good note. I would also like to point out
China, as far as I understand. I mean, right? I'm no Magellan, but I'm thinking Hong Kong is in China. So
we're just right. we're just kind of appropriating everything that's vaguely
you do what you gotta do.
Vaguely right. Eastern. Also, want to note that they refer to American mother and a Japanese father. I know those are both nationalities, but they refer to American like it's a ethnic description rather than a geographic one. I just right. thought it was kind of funny. And then last
American, I mean, she could honestly be anything. She could be Hispanic. She could be.
She could also be Japanese. You know,
also be like Japanese American. Yeah,
doesn't
exactly.
really tell you anything. And then lastly, the last line of this marvelous title slide. And now with his astounding jet car. Okay, so add jet car to that list of 12
six.
Things you count there. His astounding jet car ready for a bold assault on the dimension barrier. The wait, what now? Buckaroo Banzai faces the greatest challenge of his turbulent life. While, we're not done yet, ..
I'm exhausted already.
While high above Earth, an alien spacecraft keeps a nervous watch on all their activities. So neuroscience jet car.
If there wasn't enough with all that alone, now let's add in a spaceship nervously watching.
An alien progress. Spaceship. And there's, a lot of the adjectives and stuff in there that nervously, why are they nervous? What's going on? One of the wildest pre-title slides. I mean, so I would actually say better than the trailer would be that. Give
how
me
was
that.
Your feeling? I mean, at that point, after reading that, how was your feeling?
I was more bought in at that point because it's like,
okay.
See? I gotta know what they're trying, like how they're gonna try and pull this off with the jet car and the kung fu and the neuroscience and the rock and roll,
martial arts, not kung fu.
Even I'm sorry,
kung fu
martial,
is a martial arts.
Arts. I'm still in the
he's half Japanese, so
I'm still in the Shang-Chi mindset with all that. Nice. All right, guys, rate and review us on Apple Podcasts and follow us on Twitter and Instagram at Spoiler Wars Pod. All right, let's talk about the development of The Adventures of Buckaroo Banzai Across the Eighth Dimension. The director was W.D. Richter. Really only has one other directing credit, but he wrote a lot of movies in the late 70s and 80s that were very genre stuff. Big Trouble in Little China. Big Trouble in Little China. And
another great movie.
Very, very much like this movie. If I had to compare this to one movie just in terms of tone, it would be this, just with the kind of, it's kind of slapsticky, you know?
I have always grouped these two movies together, always. And both amazing. I love it. The sarcasm, the whole, love both movies. So yes, I agree with you. I have moved both. I've always, not even remembering who the director was, I've always kind of, because of the same feel.
Like if I can make a comparison, say 30, 40 years later now, whatever we are, it's kind of like the, if this guy was around now, he'd probably be writing a Guardians of the Galaxy movie or something like that.
Yes.
You know, that kind
of
thing.
I would agree.
The writer was Earl Mac Rausch, a novelist discovered by Richter, had a few credits in the 80s. Nothing really jumped out at me. The original draft of the script for this was called Find the Jet Car, said the president. Even a little wackier, but less...
I like what they ended up with. So I would not have gone to see it. Find the Jet Car. I'm not really enticed to go see that.
Well, and not just the Find the Jet Car, but the Find the Jet Car, comma, said the president. It's like, wait, what? The president said Find the Jet Car?
What?
Okay, whatever. All right, the cast.
Oh, it's political. I don't give a shit. It's got a president. I don't
care. There you go. The cast, Peter Weller. Mitch, did you have any relationship with Peter Weller prior to seeing this film in 1984?
No, I did not. This is actually my first enjoyment of some of his work. And then, of course, I think, what is it, 80, this is 84, 87 was the first
RoboCop? I'm not. Yeah, yeah. I don't know. I want to say
it came a couple years after this.
Yeah, yeah,
and
yeah.
And when I saw RoboCop, I'm like, holy shit, it's Buckaroo Banzai. Nobody knew what I was saying. Nobody was like, who the fuck is Buckaroo Banzai? I was like, oh, come on.
I was too young for, or at least when RoboCop came out, I was too young to really recognize that, like, oh, that who it is that there's the right. actor that's playing it.
Sure.
Weirdly enough, I think my first engagement with Peter Weller might have been on the History Channel in the early 2000s. He hosted.
Oh God, he had a yeah.
Yeah, it was like ancient, not ancient aliens. It's like, you know, ancient civilizations kind of stuff.
Yeah. And of course, I remember that show.
So that was kind of my first engagement with him. And then when the guy from that show ends up in Star Trek 2 Into Darkness or whatever it's called, the one with Khan. Yeah. I was kind of like, why is the History Channel guy in Star Trek? And then I was like, oh, no, okay, he's an actor. He's RoboCop.
He's an actual professor. You know that, right? Like, he actually goes and he is, I can't remember where he teaches. I'll have to look it up real quick. But he is an actual professor at a college.
That explains.
I'm not kidding.
So that you just connected those dots for me, because I was kind of like, I know he's got the voice, but how did he end up on the History Channel, speaking with so much authority on this stuff? Let's see. What else? John Lithgow. Mitch, what about John Lithgow?
Love John Lithgow. Love. I fell in love with John Lithgow in this movie.
Had you seen him in anything prior to this?
I had not. No. I don't know the time frame. I saw him, I believe, either after or before World According to Garp.
Right about that same time, yeah.
Yeah, so he played a transgender football player, Roberta, and he becomes friends with Robin Williams' character, and totally loved him in that as well. But yeah, this was the one where I really just like, I love the ham, I love the cheese that he threw on it, his overacting, and I was just like, I will watch anything John Lithgow is in. To this day, I want John Lithgow to be my dad. I am not kidding.
I definitely did after Third Rock from the Sun as a kid in the 90s.
Oh,
that was kind of my first engagement with Lithgow. World According to Garp was 2 years before this movie.
Okay, going back to Peter Weller really quickly. Don't mean to interrupt there, but he actually teaches literature and fine arts at Syracuse University, and he's one of Syracuse's most popular professors.
Damn, yeah. I'd love to get a lecture from RoboCop, you know?
Hell yeah, come on.
Excuse me, Professor Buckaroo,
class.
Professor Banzai.
Oh my God, I bet you I would piss him off, though, I bet.
Oh, you know he gets it all the time, though.
I'm sure.
Actually, now
alive,
his
coming
kid,
with
kid,
me.
Kids have never heard of it, probably, that are actually there now.
Yeah.
All right, Ellen Barkin took the part basically because she said it was one of the weirdest scripts she'd ever read. And she's
I've never been a Barkin fan.
Yeah, and I'm not really all that familiar with her work, to be honest. I sort of suspected she was going to have a much bigger role in the movie than she ended up. She ends up being sort of a living MacGuffin kind of at the end, you know.
Yep.
And then of course I'll go ahead and mention him here, Jeff Goldblum.
Brilliant.
Richter knew Goldblum from Invasion of the Body Snatchers, thought he'd be perfect for the part. Actually, I forgot to mention the John Lithgow role was actually written for John Lithgow with Lithgow in mind.
Oh, wow. Well, there you go. Typecast. There you go.
We have a lot to discuss about his accent and others later in the categories.
Yes, we do.
Actually, during the research for this film, I came across more stuff about Lithgow's accent than anything else in the research.
Oh, really?
So, yeah.
Oh, I can't wait to hear that. All right.
The release, August 15th, 1984. This budget was about $17 million. Opening weekend, $620,000. So, Mitch, yeah, if you went opening weekend, you were one of about 100 people that saw this movie.
Woo! Hell yeah.
The worldwide gross, a pretty meager $6.5 million lifetime.
Okay. All right.
So this is not to judge the film by the numbers, but it's the biggest commercial flop that we've done so far here on the Spoileries. But at the time,
I just paid $20 more to buy it off of Amazon. So.
one of those that you buy every generation of media that, that comes out.
Oh,
you had the
absolutely.
VHS, then the DVD, then the Blu-ray. Yeah.
I had the VHS. I then bought the DVD, and I can't find the DVD in order to record, so I just bought it off of Amazon. So I'm like, yeah, there you go.
But at the time, despite its commercial success or lack thereof, Gene Siskel at the time recognized this film will be a cult classic by the end of the decade. And he wasn't wrong about that.
Yep.
The gross overall, it was the 107th highest grossing film of 1984. Mitch, can you guess any of the other top 10 films that came out that year?
I don't know. I just sounds, it's making this movie sound so bad. But
No. It's all part of it. We just have to own what it is and how it does.
What it is.
That kind of
that's
stuff.
True. I don't know. Please enlighten me. I am eager to learn.
Well, I'm certainly not going to read all 106 that
well,
outgrossed this
five.
Film.
Give me top five.
Number one, Ghostbusters, the original. Number
of
two,
course.
Indiana Jones, Temple of Doom.
Oh, who can compete with Indy?
Yeah,
right, I got okay,
number three, Gremlins. Number four, Karate Kid. Number five, Police Academy. Number six, Footloose. Number seven, Beverly Hills Cop. So it was a pretty legendary year.
Yeah, there's a those are a lot of classics right there.
Let's see, little trivia here. I didn't find a whole lot on this one. Supposedly, Jamie Lee Curtis filmed a scene playing Buckaroo's mother in a flashback, but the scene was then cut.
Wow.
And what else? When they shot the long credits scene that ends up being the trailer, they didn't actually have the music for the film yet. They didn't have that signature theme. So they recorded it, so that everybody would be in time with music to Billy Joel's Uptown Girl, which if you watch it, if you kind of hear Uptown Girl in the back of your head, you can. It's
now
like,
I got to go watch it.
Totally.
Again.
They are hitting the Uptown Girl with every step.
Yeah, go ahead. Sorry.
But yeah, supposedly a lot of the actors, you know, particularly Lithgow and Christopher Lloyd, you know, they're all doing some kind of goofy accent work, you know, with these kind of alien kind of accents and stuff. But yep. I guess they hadn't really rehearsed any of it, so nobody had heard each other's weird accents until they were on set. And they, like, couldn't film scenes because, like, the first time Peter Weller heard Lithgow's accent, he couldn't stop laughing. And it's in the scene where they're torturing him. So he's, just cannot stop laughing during this
where
torture
they're shocking
scene.
His nuts. You gotta...
Yeah. And Lithgow had the same thing when he heard Christopher Lloyd in the pre-launch scene at the end of the movie. He breaks up laughing. He just can't, you know, everybody just sounds so weird. But despite all that, I actually thought it was pretty well shot. Like I was kind of impressed when the film opened, that especially that, you know, the slow, we're in the desert with the jet car test and all that.
Yeah.
It was actually, obviously the desert had something to do with it, but it like was like George Miller-esque almost, like the way they were shooting the car, very Mad Max kind of, these wide shots of the landscape, all that kind of stuff. What else? Some pretty trippy visuals, I thought, too, for 1984, like better than some of the stuff that was out at the time in terms of the electrical effects and some of that kind of stuff. A lot of the practical effects were just meant to look campy and were, you know, budgetary constraints as well. What else? All right, you ready to get into the awards, Mitch?
I'm ready to get it. I will just say, before we do awards, I want to do a shout out, first of all, for this being a movie where it's like literally a who's who. The majority of this cast you've seen in so many different bits and movies. And it was just like, they just like crop picked so many people. I will say, opening sequence, like you were talking about just a second ago, the one thing that killed me for me was the actor Matt Clark. He plays Secretary of Defense.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
So he turns around and I'm like, oh, it's not that guy. I just keep associating him, and I don't think it's actually him, but I keep associating him with the bad guy in the TV series The Incredible Hulk, you know, with Bill Bixby.
Oh, right. I don't remember the bad guy
but
in
I
that
don't,
one, though. Yeah,
I don't think it's the reporter that keeps going after Banner, you know.
He kind of has
I
that
think
look,
this is
though.
The guy. Yeah, and I think this is what's the guy, but for some strange reason, every time I see him, I get disappointed. I'm like, oh, man, it's the bad guy. I don't like the bad guy, you know? I don't know, because I saw Incredible Hulk when I was a kid, so, you know, early on, you get that impression, and it's like, if you see an actor that plays a bad guy in the very first role you see him, he's always going to have
that yeah. stigma. Oh, 100%. Yeah, absolutely.
Or he or she, not to discriminate, you know, or be sexist about it, but... Usually well, this, it's the bad guy, but
this yeah. this movie has one of the deepest benches for the Flash Thompson is Deathstroke Award that yes. we've ever had. Yeah, a lot of big names and faces that kind of broke out after this, and we'll get to it. But that I thought actually did a really good job in this movie, despite the campiness of it.
So yes, let's get into the awards because I'm excited to hear some of your choices.
All right, well let's get into it. Our spoilery awards for Buckaroo Banzai. We'll start it off with I Laughed the Hardest When. Mitch, you go first.
Okay. This isn't going to mean anything to anybody, but I've always used this, especially when I was doing In Heavy Syrup, my other podcast.
I think I know where you're going.
Okay. So my big thing is I laugh the hardest when they're in the nightclub and... He keeps calling her Peggy, and I can't remember. It's
Penny?
Penny.
Yeah, Pretty
he calls
Penny.
Her Peggy, though. Yeah, so when Penny Pitty is actually, Pretty is actually crying, and he's like, hey, don't be cruel, because no matter where you go, there you are. I about shit my pants the first time I heard that. I was like, what the fuck does that mean?
Well, I
but
love
it's
that
always
he
stuck with me.
Even in the moment, his band's kind of like, what's going on here? Yeah. What are we doing? Is this real? You know.
So and like you hear the crowd in the background. Yeah, somebody already playing her fiddle, and he's like, hey, don't be mean. So I'm sorry for me that. So I use that line no matter where you are, or no matter where you go. There you are.
That
was my outro when I did In Heavy Syrup.
So, I mean, of course, heard the phrase, but something about Weller's delivery in that, just like pure smooth jazz, wherever
you
go.
Oh, it's gold.
There you are.
Yeah. You know? It's gold. It's gold. Peter Weller is gold. I mean, I'm sorry. I want to see him in more shit, but he doesn't want to act that much.
Well, just a couple of things I want to call out for I Laughed the Hardest. This wasn't my hardest laugh. This would be a runner-up. But the little thing with the aliens having ridiculous last name, all being named John with names. John Big Booty,
true.
John Smallberries, stuff like that.
Yeah, Smallberries was like, did he just say that?
They're just doing it. They're just going for it. Let's see. I did like the... This was almost something out of like a, I don't know, like a Naked Gun type spoof movie when they're like, they think they may have to go to war and the president gets a secret weapon instruction manual with a, and then pulls out of a tiny little envelope, Declaration of War, short form.
The short form. That's true.
It was just like, I loved it, but even that was like, okay, we're just spoofing ourselves at this point, you know?
I also, if I may throw in another candidate for
always.
Me, I think probably second or third to the short form for me was that Yakov Smirnoff plays the secretary of something. I can't. He's the guy on the phone next to the president.
Really?
He plays the national security advisor in the hospital room with the president. So you've got a Russian guy playing... This character, I thought that once I found out that it was him, so it wasn't part of the movie, but when I was like, why do I know that guy? He looks so familiar, and I look it up, and it's Yakov Smirnoff, I laughed my ass off. So.
Well, funny that the sort of meta sense of it, that they're sitting there talking about going to war with Russia, and he's being played by a Russian and all that.
He's a Russian, yeah.
There's also the element of the, I guess I had it in the, what the hell was that? But the, why is the president in this weird hospital bed, and like, is that a part of the plot or something? You know, it's kind of like a... I don't know. I don't know what was going on with that. If they were like, the president just needs to be handicapped.
There are so many things littered throughout this movie that they don't explain. They draw it. I mean, it's clearly you're drawing attention to it, or it's like the elephant in the room, but nobody is addressing it. And and then also the actor who plays the president was the biggest surprise for me.
Who was that?
Do you know who that was?
No, I didn't have him.
Ronald Lacey. Okay, you may know him from being the bad guy from the very first Indiana Jones movie. The guy that ends up with the black trench coat, and he has the burnt image on the
I'm mad at myself for blanking on the character's name at the moment, but yeah,
I don't know the character's name, but I told Turtle this, and she was like, I showed him a picture or showed her a picture, and she's like, that's not the same. I was like, look at him. I said, it's the same guy. They just heavily make-upped him to be this president guy. So, yeah, I just thought that was one of those shocker kind of holy shit moments. Not so much a laughing, you know, like, holy crap, but yeah.
So I
probably got off of ward topics, but
No, you're fine. You're fine. I just throw a few other funnies in there. They're at the little alien crash site, and it's Christopher Lloyd and his little cronies there. Something about the way Christopher Lloyd punches those guys out, it's this kind of like straight punch. You know, yeah, it's like the arm just extends like a Rock'em Sock'em or something. I just love the action of that. Because they deliberately cut it short, so it looks like he's kind of super speed punch, but it's just hilarious the way they stand there stupidly with their arms out. and then I just also wanted to call out, at one point, Rawhide is on the radio with Buckaroo and telling Buckaroo about something, and Buckaroo's does the deuce, you say.
Yeah,
the deuce you say. I don't know what.
I instantly heard Stewie from Family Guy.
The deuce you say.
Exactly. I was like, is that where that comes from? I kind of think it might be. I don't know. You'd have to tell me if that was a thing.
I have no. I heard that too, and I'm like, okay. I just took it as one of those idiosyncrasies of Buckaroo that, you know.
Yeah.
That's what he does. That's how he talks.
Do you have anything else for the funny stuff?
You hit on the short form, the small berries. I love that. Those are the other ones that I had on my list. And then, I love the fact that you got a girl crying and then he sings this really like just horrible song.
Yeah.
Old girl is going to go kill herself right there in the midst of all this going on.
She's really not a fan of audience participation.
She's not doing any of this. She doesn't want to hear any of it. But yeah, I just think that was, and of course Jeff Goldblum, the saddlebags, by the way, his luggage that he ended up packing.
Yes.
If you saw those, they're a US grade A genuine cowhide with the fur still on it. So it was fantastic. That was another laughable one for me as well.
Well, I think, you know, there's certainly some other candidates you could throw out for bad motherfucker, but, I mean, Buckaroo Banzai is kind of the ultimate bad motherfucker.
That's the way they build him. Yeah, like, they build him to be that.
Yeah.
Sure.
I mean, it could be, bad motherfucker Buckaroo Banzai. You know, you could have just thrown that in the name because they were this guy is the best at everything. He is the coolest at everything. You know, all of that.
But the bad motherfucker move that he did for me was when he's with New Jersey, or Jeff Goldblum's character, they're in the hallway, and they come to a T intersection, and he shoots one way, does this
behind
this
the back
flip shit behind the back, shoots the other way, goes back again in order to fire another one, and then finally New Jersey shoots behind him with the gun right next to his head, and he doesn't flinch.
That was a good one.
That's a bad motherfucker right there.
Yeah, that was almost a laugh out loud moment for me, the behind the back part of it. Like, let's make this as difficult as possible to actually shoot the guys on either side.
But he did it seamlessly, though.
He did it.
That was awesome.
And I really love that they gave him like a Colt 45 six shooter, you know?
Yes.
And not like, you know, more, Desert Eagle kind of, weapons. The moment that I had, I mean, yeah, there's a bunch of like, yeah, I'm just a bad motherfucker taking care of business moments for him. But the one that I did was, so he's, at the press conference in the opening act after the trip into the other dimension or whatever. He's kind of switched out of all his cool stuff into his science stuff. And, he's real casual. And in the middle of this press conference, you know, one of the assistants is like, oh, sorry, you got a call from the president. So he's on his way.
President of what?
Yeah, well, he's on his way to take a call from the president. and makes a dick joke on the way when Penny's like, oh, you forgot your overthruster. He's like, why don't you hold on to it for me for a minute? And kind of grins and winks at her a little bit.
True. Like, and she's like, and she goes, anytime.
Yeah, exactly. And I'm I'm sorry, I'm a breaking news press conference. I've got to go take a call, but I got to squeeze in this dick joke first. That's a bad motherfucker right there.
Oh, I'm sorry, I forgot. I got to backtrack. I have one more candidate for Laugh Out Loud.
Uh-huh.
I didn't think about it before until I actually just watched it again for this this review. But I love when the message was coming through for Buckaroo, and the only way that they could watch it and see it is by putting bubble wrap goggles over their eyes. Yeah. Like, okay.
I wasn't sure where to put that one. I stuck that in my, the next category, actually. The nipples on a bat suit for wild costume hair or makeup. I had the bubble wrap safety goggles as my nipples on a bat suit.
There's a couple of contenders for this one for me. So yeah. Why I put it in comedy, the laugh out loud part.
But I mean, this is like first grade, you know, playing, you know, Star Wars or whatever in the garage. And like, yeah, let me just cut this real quick. I mean, it's like homemade.
What were they looking through? I still don't understand. What were the lenses?
The lens was uncovered.
What was it?
So they don't do anything.
It looked like the bottom of a soda bottle or something. I had no idea.
I just, you can tell that was like, okay, we've kind of run out of the budget, but we need some goofy goggles for this scene. What do we do? Hey, use the bubble wrap. And some of them looked like they had little things stuck on them, and some of them didn't.
Yeah, like there was a point cut out for people's nose. So it was almost like a Batman cowl.
Or a Ninja Turtle kind of thing. Yeah.
Right. Yeah. Cut out of bubble wrap, but you know.
So what was your nominee for Nipples on a Bat Suit, Mitch?
Oh, my gosh. There was a couple. Mm-hmm. So I'll just go through the list real quick. First of all, Jeff Goldblum.
Yeah, the cowboy outfit. I mean,
the cowboy outfit it was crazy. And he doesn't change out of it either. You know?
No, yeah.
Perfect Tommy, Reno, they all change clothes. New Jersey never changes that cowboy outfit. With the chaps, by the way, the furry chaps.
The furry chaps, yeah.
The furry the furry assless chaps. You gotta love that. No, but also, oh my gosh, the alien costumes.
Mm-hmm.
So, which one was a good alien? John Phillips?
We had Christopher Lloyd, we had Carl Lumley, we had,
those guys are the bad aliens. Hold on. I'll find it. It was John Parker. So he had the spandex, bodysuit. With the silver sports coat on it.
You're talking about played by Carl Lumley from Falcon and the Winter Soldier? Yeah.
Exactly. So, and this was actually the first time I've seen Carl Lumley, but it was really kind of cool watching him with the whole Jamaican accent type of thing.
Yeah, yes, yeah.
But the one that was in the pod that the hunters were going after had like a feather boa around the neck.
Yes, notice that.
Like all this ostrich plumage going on some of the outfits, even in the spaceship, the outfits that they were wearing, absolutely crazy. So that was really kind of nipples on the bat suit.
If I can cut in real quick, there's a lot of costume stuff in this movie, set design stuff too, I guess, back to the hospital bed with the president, that have the feel of like, okay, we've got access to a props warehouse. Just find a way to use everything you can. Oh, we got some boas in there. Yeah, throw them on the aliens. You know, that kind of stuff. I cut you off. Go ahead.
No. You're fine. I mean, because you're absolutely right. I mean, it's literally just a hodgepodge of clothing, accessories half the time that are just like over the top. Oh, man.
Throw some more in there. Make it weirder. Just throw some. What do we got? Yeah, that definitely.
Oh,
that
and when Ellen Barkin's character, when she's, you know, at Penny at the end, she's laying, you know, she's in the back of the bus, which literally, you know, she's down, you know, laying on the mats and everything else. She's got, I don't even understand how she ended up getting changed into this. She's got a torn white silk shirt, but she's got Hakama pants on. Which is, that's the pants, the outer pants, a clothing garment that samurais would wear.
Right.
And they're all ripped to shreds. Like, who put her in that?
I was kind of wondering that. I thought she was wearing them when she, like, kind of breaks out of captivity there. And I'm just like, wait, what are, are pants torn up or what's
They're Hakama pants, and I may be saying it incorrectly, but that's always how I got taught. But that's what you would wear, like a black belt in Aikido. They would wear that. That's part of your, you know, what you would wear. And it's like,
I think there was a,
how did she end up in that?
We need something that shows a little leg here, you know?
Yeah. So let's rip Hakama pants and she'll be fine. Yeah.
Let's, we
show
need
a little sexy thigh and
something a little creepy sexually. Let's put a tarantula on her thigh. That'll,
there you go.
Turn up the heat a little bit.
I think finally there was one other one, that I had. It's eluding me, so go on. I'll probably come back to it. So
I'm gonna
you'll probably end up saying it.
Yeah, I've got a couple of these. We're like, man, I'm not sure which category to put this one in tonight. It could go into a few of them. So
yes.
Let's see. Mulan Quim Award for Damn Good Ham. I mean, I think there's really only one candidate, right? I mean, Lithgow's the ultimate ham in this.
I would agree.
And you know, it's ham for me. When you can tell that the actor is, when the actor's going really, really big, but you can tell they're in it. You know what I mean? They're not just big for big sake. They're big because they're sort of possessed by this big character, you know? That's the definition of Damn Good Ham to me. But segueing off of that, the Robin Hood Sounds Like He's From California Award for Noticeable Accent Work, Lithgow as Dr. Lizardo. So, I don't know how they came up with this accent. And like I said, Peter Weller had never heard it before until they went to film the torture scene where he's getting his balls electrocuted by this guy with this crazy accent. And he just could not keep a straight face because he was like, you're an Italian Martian? I mean, he really is just doing Italian. And the little bit of research on that is they actually found a dialect coach who was not really a dialect coach. His name was... Roberto Terminelli. He was actually the tailor on the 20th Century Fox lot with a heavy Italian accent.
Oh, my God.
So Lithgow would have Roberto speak his lines from the script into a tape recorder, which he used to practice the accent. Now, I don't know what made Lithgow decide, you know what's the perfect accent for this character? Italian. But it kind of works in a
he's playing an Italian professor, right? I mean, what's the
I guess Lizardo, yeah.
Lizardo, Dr. Emilio Lizardo, yeah. So,
but I have a feeling they were like, you know, what are we going to call the bad guy? Oh, I don't know, lizard, Lizardo. Yeah, that sounds evil, you know.
Sure, so,
which
not?
Also happens to sound vaguely Italian. You know, we could shout out Carl Lumley's Jamaican accent work there. Did you have anything else for this one, Mitch?
Yakov Smirnoff, he has an American accent that he fails epically on a couple of words.
Yeah.
Because you can really, when he has the big line, when he was on the phone and he's, you know, asking the president, you know, about stuff, and then his Russian comes out a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
So that's very easily able to be heard. I think that's really basically it.
Okay.
As far as I know.
Well, like I said, if your sort of front man is Lithgow doing this crazy Italian lizard accent, you know, it's really, you know.
Yes.
Yeah, awards complete, you know.
Yep. Yeah. Oh, he steals the cake. I mean, I love anything that he's in, and he just did a fantastic job. He really did.
So I was struggling with the next two awards. We've got the Phil Coulson Memorial Award for Outstanding Performance by a Role Player. This is really the not the lead character that does the most. And then the Flash Thompson Award. You know, a lot of these people could kind of fit in one or both categories. But starting off with the Phil Coulson Memorial Award, I've got two candidates with this. Jeff Goldblum may be too prominent for getting the award, but I think he's a candidate. But the winner for me actually is Clancy Brown as Rawhide.
Yes.
I think he really, I don't know. There's just something about his just cool, suave Southern thing in this that really kind of carries the, like, I don't think too much about this, you know, stuff. What'd you think?
I agree. I was going to say him or Pretty Tommy, who was, portrayed, Lewis Smith. They were really kind of hamming it up enough, you know, in order to play those roles. But I again, I'm such a fan of the majority of the actors and actresses in this. Clancy Brown, by far, I love anything with him in it, and he definitely, he's a presence. Yeah. He always is a presence, no matter what he does. And so, yeah, I agree wholeheartedly.
Enough so that when he sort of gets taken out of the movie, you know, at the end of the second act, you kind of miss him for that final act stuff, you know.
Indeed.
I think, like I said, just something about that, like, oh, yeah, this is like everything's just kind of normal to him. And he really sells that to the audience of like, yeah, this is just part of the Buckaroo Banzai, you know, Hong Kong Cavaliers lifestyle.
Is what he does.
All right, we've got a lot more candidates for the Flash Thompson is Deathstroke Award. A bunch of people that were in this that certainly went on to bigger and better careers. I'm going to start with kind of the less obvious ones here, or the ones that I think may have been kind of more forgotten at this point, but I certainly remember as an 80s and 90s kid. Vincent Scavelli, I think is how you say it.
Absolutely.
Fast Times at Ridgemont High, Batman Returns, Ghost.
Yeah.
Absolutely. He's got one of the most distinct faces in film.
He was in Weird Science, too, I think, wasn't he?
Oh, yeah. Long list of credits in the 80s and 90s. You know, sometimes it's more of a role, and other times it's more of, we just need a quick shot of a crazy-looking face to throw in
That's
here.
That's him.
And
yeah,
Vincent Scavelli is that. I also wanted to shout out the when they're in their human costumes and they're at the little crashed alien site, kind of looking at it, trying to figure out how to crack it open. He whips out this pipe that is just one of the coolest pipes I've ever seen. I don't know what was going on. I mean, it was huge for one thing.
Oh yeah, I thought it was like some Sherlock Holmes type of like wooden thing that he had, but like. He then turned towards the camera, and he's got like kind of almost, it's more than a three-quarter shot.
Yeah.
And you can see the image. I mean, it looks just so alien, but.
It almost looks like their spaceship, kind of.
Yeah, and he's just, and again, he just plays a part like, great night, huh?
Yeah, exactly.
Or, you know, whatever you said.
That's like, what sells it. That's what sells it. It's just that typical like, yeah, what's going on, Kappa, kind of thing on the side, but it's this ridiculous hookah thing almost.
Yes,
in this season.
Yes.
Along with Vincent Scavelli, Dan Hedaya is sort of his alien partner in that.
Yes. A
recognizable face from Usual Suspects, Clueless, Night at the Roxbury, Maverick, a bunch of other things in the mid-90s. Usually
Absolutely.
Kind of a smarmy rich guy. And then let's see.
He was also the husband of Carla in Cheers.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, so that was another, again, TV series, but that was another one I saw him in. I recognized him like, oh my gosh, it's a guy. So, yeah.
And of course, we have already mentioned Carl Lumley, familiar with us on this podcast from Falcon
Absolutely.
And the Winter Soldier here very recently. He plays basically the good alien, the kind of allied alien that's teaming up with Buckaroo, rocking the full dreadlocks.
The good John.
The good John. Yeah, exactly. I think we talked about it during Falcon and the Winter Soldier. Not my first encounter with Carl Lumley, but my more memorable ones is his brief arc on Battlestar Galactica, where he plays like a pilot that was captured by the Cylons 20 years ago
and then gets re-released
and stuff. But there are moments in that where, one, he's got kind of crazy dreadlocks in it, and two, he's like kind of falling out of oozing alien spacecrafts that like – I'm actually going to have to go back and rewatch Battlestar because I almost think they did like some shot for shot stuff for his sort of escaping the spacecraft in Buckaroo.
Well, now you've got me curious. I want to see that myself. That would be pretty interesting.
Have to go back and check that one. I think that was like a season two episode. I have to go back and check for that one at some point.
Okay.
And the last Flash Thompson I want to shout out here. First of all, I should say I'm going to give Carl Lumley my Flash Thompson award just because. He's gone on to, you know, another show that we have previously done on podcast.
Of course.
But my sort of second runner up, I love this guy, Jonathan Banks as the hospital guard.
Yes.
You know, really kind of broke out here in the last few years on Breaking Bad and now Better Call Saul as Mike Ehrmantraut. Very cool character on that. Mitch, do you have any other Flash Thompson?
I do. Clancy Brown. Honestly, the man has 301 IMDb film credits as an actor.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, I first saw him in 83 in a movie called Bad Boys with Sean Penn. He plays, so they're in like a juvenile delinquency home or something along those lines. And he was, you know, one of the tough guys that Sean Penn's character has to, have conflict with. But ever since I saw him, and again, a year later, he ends up being this character in Buckaroo Banzai. So literally going from playing a high school juvenile to Rawhide in Buckaroo in a year, I mean, that's pretty awesome. But yeah, just the credits alone, I wanted to show you. I brought this up. So again, 310 credits. He's also, this is his credit listing for SpongeBob SquarePants. So
Jesus.
Wait for it.
Yeah.
Wait for it.
Big time, I mean, voice actor for sure.
Oh yeah. I mean, he's amazingly, he's been in so much stuff that people just don't realize.
Yeah, exactly.
That it's him.
Well, people probably don't realize he's in the MCU as the voice of Surtur in Thor Ragnarok. He does
right? he
a
Berg.
Lot of voices for the Star Wars animated series, but also is in live action Mandalorian.
Yeah, he plays Berg, the devil looking mm-hmm, character. Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, great actor. He also appears in the CW Arrowverse as well. I forget the character's name, but some asshole general kind of thing.
But
so
again, also most importantly, the Kurgan. With in Highlander.
No, yep.
Have you not? You've seen Highlander. Yes?
I've seen Highlander. Yeah, I've seen it. Okay. Right. But I don't remember it as well. I need to go back and.
But yeah, I was just always. I have always anything with Clancy. He was also in Starship Troopers.
Mm-hmm,
I mean, he just so many good roles, and they're just small little Shawshank Redemption. He was in that.
He was in that. He's had a great turn on Billions on Showtime. I don't know if you've seen that, Mitch. But
yeah, absolutely.
He plays Jock Jeffcoat, the Secretary of the Treasury or something like that.
Yeah. It's, he just
Attorney
plays
General.
That rough kind of, but I mean, honestly, to with all of the credits that he has, I mean, 301, it pretty much the rest of them pale in comparison to him. So he's got to get my award.
Yeah, I think actually no shots at Carl Lumley. I think Carl Lumley is getting my Flash Thompson just because I gave Phil Coulson to Clancy Brown. But in terms of his credits, yeah, you kind of can't dispute him. He's an all-time Flash Thompson.
big time
category
big time.
For us. All right, number eight. What the hell was that? A movie like this, you know, you don't want to get it too much into making a long list of things that didn't quite line up for you.
It'll go like a whole page of shit.
Yeah. I'll just throw out a couple. We already talked about the president's hospital bed. That was a little weird. The jet car is a small Ford F-150 pickup, basically. Which they don't even try to like disguise by changing the grill or anything.
No, it's the emblem is still Ford is right in the center of it. Yeah.
I don't know if that was before the Lyco Rock commercials, but
maybe. Actually, in this movie, that's got two meanings.
Yeah,
like a rock, you're going through a rock, and yeah. Okay.
Exactly. let's see what else. Wait, give me some what the hell's, Mitch.
Oh my God. Okay. What the hell is up with the precursor of the flux capacitor with his little thing that he had? Did you see the little, I'm like, that's the flux capacitor right there.
Pretty much. Yeah, pretty much.
What the hell? I mean, could you have disguised it a little bit? But I mean, again, they came up with Back to the Future way after this movie. So
yeah, a couple of years, I guess. What was the first one? 85 or 87, I think maybe.
Something like that. Yeah.
But yeah, I guess something was in the ether at the time.
and the guys who actually built the DeLorean said they just went to a parts place and just started grabbing stuff.
Oh, yeah.
And it just, they happened to see this. I mean, who knows? I mean, but yeah, I mean, it was, you could not get any more flux capacitor than that. the other, what the hell, towards the end, the two what the hells, you've got, first of all, where did he get the parachute? He apparently falls out of the little pod after blowing up John Lithgow's character in the big mother ship.
Yep.
Saves the world yet again. Where the fuck did he get a parachute? I mean, he is in full gear.
Uh-huh.
And then the John Parker, who was in there, who just said 2 minutes prior, I'm supposed to be a diplomat. I don't know
how to
fly
the spaceship.
Thing.
Then he starts doing loop-de-loops. And...
Oh, he's doing a Millman's. He's doing a curve. He's diving. He's coming back up again. And like, you know, like what? Seriously, what just happened?
He went from I can't fly to literally Maverick buzzing the tower in
right.
Top Gun. You know?
Right. Like, and then also, so Reno, oh my gosh. All right, so the Bad Johns are coming in. They've intruded the Buckaroo, you know, Ponderosa thing going
on.
Yeah,
compound.
They're in the compound. And you've got Reno and New Jersey going through. And he's like, is that a watermelon? What is a watermelon doing here? And he's like, I'll tell you later. They never fucking tell you later.
Never go back to.
What the fuck's up with the watermelon? I want to know what's going on with the watermelon.
Maybe that was something... They were saving for the sequel that they teased very obviously at the end of the movie. That never.
I would like to think that, yeah, but I don't know. I don't know. And
I just like that they fleshed it out with that kind of shit. It's like, you know.
Oh, it's littered with it. It's littered with it. And it just, yeah. And I mean, that's my short list, but I mean, I'm sure I don't want to take up all of it. I'm sure you've got yours, so.
Well, that's most of mine. I wanted to ask you, I didn't even know what the character's name was, but during the final assault, it's the guy in Buckaroo's crew that he kind of looks a little bit like Native American or Hispanic, maybe.
He has his arm in a sling.
Was it in a sling? I thought it was
like
a fashion.
Reno. He got shot. He got shot earlier.
Okay. I didn't realize he got shot earlier. I thought this was just like a weird fashion choice to wear arm.
Yeah. No, his character name is Reno Nevada.
Okay.
So that's Reno. Yeah. So what about him?
Well, I thought it was just a fashion
choice. Oh, you
want
to know what's going on?
Yeah, what was the deal with
his
arm? I thought it was just like a weird, like, hey, we're all dressing weird, so my guy's thing is I like to have one arm out of my jacket.
At the press conference where he gets pulled away from to talk to the president.
That's right. Quote, that's right.
So he gets shot, and he's in the arm sling for the rest of the movie.
Okay. Well, that does explain it then, actually. I thought you'd have an answer for me. And then my last what the hell was that was the last line of the movie is an alien on the spaceship that says, so what? Big deal. Cut to black.
Yeah.
It's just
a
strange, like, kind of pin on it there at the end. Like, just kind of like,
yeah.
Okay.
I guess we're over. That's cool. So,
well, and it's also just has a weird, like, yeah, this was just kind of wild and weird and wacky, and yeah, so what? It didn't matter, you know?
All right, the other what the hell, the rope that comes over, so, and then you've got Weller up there on the top, you know, with the epic scene, you know, he's standing there in his little bow ties are cool, by the way, and his little, you know, his suit, but then he grabs the rope in order to be able to walk down, because he almost had to rappel down the side of the riverbed, you know, man-made river, the concrete riverbed. It was like, I wonder whether or not he basically said, I'm not walking down that thing by myself. He goes, I need something to hang on to.
Yeah.
Because they just wanted to get that shot of him at the top. And then he had to walk down, you know, in the group of everyone. And I don't know. I was like, what the hell's with the rope? I mean, I want to know the story behind that.
It's got a touch of a steep incline on that one. So, yeah, I wouldn't blame him if he did.
Yeah. Yep.
All right. Another category I don't want to get too deep into on this one, but the worst, most pointless scene. You kind of can't use that kind of discrimination on a movie like this, you know?
That you'd take away half the movie.
but I actually thought a lot of the stuff with the president was pretty superfluous. I mean, I did love the short form declaration of war joke, but it was a little too much. You know, it's kind of typical of like a disaster movie. We got to cut back to what the president's doing.
Right.
But I just didn't, I found that a little bit confusing.
I would agree.
Did you have anything for, I got some heartburn. Whew.
You all right?
Yeah. Do you have anything for most pointless? Cut it.
Honestly, for me, I didn't like the whole thing with Penny. Like, like, what purpose other than the fact that she was the love interest and she eventually has like the little flux capacitor thing or the, you know, whatever that is. I mean, honestly, it's 80s. You got to throw some sexy in there. You know, Ellen Barkin was pretty hot at that point, you know, with her little, you know, pixie haircut and all that. She's cute.
Particularly this weird, like, he was married to her twin sister, but she lost her memory of having a sister. I'm still a little unclear about what was going on.
She had no
idea,
so they were separated maybe at birth.
Yeah.
That was what he thinks. He thinks that they actually got separated at birth and is like, ah, nailed it. Perfect. Why didn't I think of that before?
It's like they threw in a bunch of concepts that were essentially like one sentence log lines for other movies, you know?
Well, the whole thing with the ex-girlfriend or the ex-wife or whatever it was, or the you know, the former Mrs. Bonsai, I mean, it's like, okay, it doesn't have any real meaning into the whole story, even though this hodgepodge of shit going on around you.
It's just part of the, we've also got to establish he's kind of a ladies' man kind of thing.
Right, right. Yeah. So that's the whole point with that. So I was like, why do all that? And then the countless walking through the hallways that they're clearly in some like water purification plant or something with the big cables that are, you know, lining the hallways. And it's like, oh boy. All right. We can just have enough that it just got long. It seemed like it dragged out that last scene a little bit, you know.
I agree. Yeah. 100% on that. There was a lot of like, wait, haven't we already been in this room? Okay. Now this other guy got the,
we're just filming down the same corridor. Like, what are we doing?
Can we spray a little more water on that floor, please? only other thing I wanted to shout out here, and I don't know if I'd cut it. So the whole part with Penny where you first meet Penny, where the band's playing a gig at like a New Jersey nightclub.
Right.
It was kind of, so I know you want to establish that they're like also a rock band.
Right.
But they sort of sell Buckaroo as this like international famous figure. And he's playing this real schmaltzy, shitty little New Jersey nightclub. You know, it's like for the tour bus and everything else, he ought to be playing The Garden. You know what I'm saying?
Right, right.
But I get a movie with this kind of budget can't get The Garden, but, you know, you could have kind of faked it somehow.
It's crazy that the Highlander can actually, they had the budget to get The Garden, but Buckaroo can't get The Garden.
That's right. You know, I kind of forgot to mention it earlier, but while we're talking about it, I actually feel like this movie, if it had about $7-8 million more put into it for, you know, costumes and sets and stuff like that.
Oh, yeah.
I think this would have been a, you know, at least like a top 30 of the year, something that would have had more cultural relevance. So it's amazing that it had that impact on such a low budget. It got a lot done with that. It's just a shame it couldn't kind of go over the top a little bit more with, you know, a few more dollars there. All right, Mitch, what's your favorite part of this movie?
Oh, man. There's so many. And I don't have anything for this. Actually, if you tell you yours, I'll think of mine. But
I don't really have one either, actually. Yeah, I don't really have like a best scene. I really enjoyed all the stuff at Buckaroo's compound.
Yeah.
But I think that was just more of like the, I want to see a series of this, you know, just the what's going on at Buckaroo's compound, you know, what's Reno up to today, what's New Jersey up to today, you know, all that kind of stuff. So it wasn't a scene or a moment, but it was just like, I want more of that part of this, you know?
Right.
Same on like the tour bus and some of that kind of stuff.
Yeah. I would like to have seen more of like him, because you saw him doing he's in the back of the bus and he's kneeling and he's praying, meditating and everything. Mm-hmm, he's got a sword by his side. You don't see a whole lot of that aspect. And I mean, in the 80s, honestly, that was a huge draw. That was part of the draw with this character, was that you've got a guy that, like, he's a neuroscientist, samurai, he's a warrior, he knows what he's doing, you know, this whole nine yards, and that's all you see. That's the only time that he actually holds a samurai sword at all.
Yeah, it's really just kind of a perfunctory nod to it to let you know he does this stuff, but we never get to see him do it, you know?
Right. Right, exactly. And I mean, I don't know. I would have liked to have seen more of that. Like you said, I would like to see more of that in a series. You see it in the comic books, because I remember buying the comic books after the movie came out. And this was literally right about the time, probably like a couple of years after I started collecting. And when this movie came out, and of course the comic books came out, I was all about it. I was all in. I was just like, yeah, give me more. I was starving for more information. You know, I just wanted it, you know, not to end. I was really hoping, because at the end credits, it says, you're going to see Buckaroo again in the, you know, in the next film. And it's like, that never happened. And it was like, wow, what a disappointment. But I don't know.
I'll be honest. I'm kind of shocked. Nobody's tried to, if not reboot this, then kind of take some of those core ideas of like the guy that is everything and right. can do anything and is like, you know, I'm almost surprised some of that hasn't found its way into like, say, the MCU, you know, where one of these crazy right. superhero characters is also a rock star, you know, the sort of examination of fame and heroics in there, I think could have been interesting. Yes. All right, Mitch, I don't think I've got to ask you if you would recommend this movie because you picked this movie, so you recommended it, so we know the answer to that.
Highly, yes.
And I assume this will also not be the last time you watch this movie.
No, it will not be the last time. Now that I have purchased it again on Amazon, I will go back and actually, and now especially that you told me the Uptown Girl thing on the end credits, I'm going to go back as soon as we finish recording here. I'm going to go to watch that part.
See if it lines up, yeah.
Yes. Because I think that would absolutely be hysterical.
Well, I would recommend it from a sense of like it's you've never really seen anything like this before, especially if you know 90s 2000s. I really cannot think of anything that's like. I mean, yeah, we talked about Big Trouble in Little China being yes. tonally similar, but it's also from the same era. I can't think of anything from you know the 90s 2000s that really compares with this in any way.
That's true.
I mean, I'll be honest, it's not like I recommend you sit down, put this on and just soak in every minute of it. It's the kind of thing you can throw on while you're cleaning up the house on a Friday afternoon. Yeah. You know, watch the first 30 minutes, get the feel for it and then just kind of, you know, soak it in.
Go off, do your own
bit.
Thing.
Yeah.
Again, it's one of those to where, look, you want a good example of what the movies that were being churned out in the 80s, that like this movie defines the 1980s as far as I'm concerned. I mean, it's an 84, the clothing, the whole attitude, the music that was into it. I mean, yeah, if you want a screenshot image of what like the whole vibe of the 80s was, this would be one of those movies that I would absolutely recommend, but also just the entertainment value. I mean, it's yeah. Peter Weller, it's Clancy Brown, I mean, it's Jeff Goldblum, Christ
and
almighty.
They're all just going for it, they're all just owning all, it going
John
for
Lithgow
it.
Yeah, they don't hold anything back with this film. It's just the campiest shit you've ever noted, and just if you go in with that attitude, you're going to have fun watching this film and go, oh my God, that's that guy.
Yeah, yeah.
And you're
yeah,
just going to, exactly. you know, it's Carl Lemley. Holy shit, that's him, you know. And it takes you a second in order for you to realize that. And it's like, that's part of half the fun of seeing, okay, this is a great film. Looking at what these characters or these actors have done more recently. Like, yeah. again, Peter Weller being in the latest Star Trek. Seeing what he looked like back before RoboCop, you know? Yeah. I mean, it was like, come on. By the way, will say, Marvel actually produced the Buckaroo Banzai comic.
Oh, did they?
I have this comic book.
Oh, nice.
So, or I had it, I think. It's in one of my storage bins. But Marvel is the actual producer and publisher of the Buckaroo Banzai comic book after the movie came out.
That's awesome.
So
I wasn't sure how
to jump on that.
I wasn't sure how like kind of widely available the what a hit the comics were, you know, if they were.
It wasn't. Yeah. It wasn't a big sale. It was literally coming off of the end of the movie. So the 100 of us that actually went to go see it, probably 50 of us went to go buy the comic book. So okay. That's about it.
Yeah. Well, you can tell they were definitely kind of plotting this out as this multimedia cross-platform. We're going to have comics. Oh, yeah. We're going to have video games. We're going to have albums. And, you know, just didn't quite work out as far as the gross goes. But, yep. Like I said, I think they were really ahead of its time in terms of trying to do a lot of that with building a universe.
Yes, sir. I would agree. I would completely agree.
Well, friends, that's our show. Thanks for joining us, Mitch.
Thank you. Appreciate it. Thanks for humoring me and doing this pick. I really have enjoyed going down memory lane like this with you. So thank you very much for allowing us to do this.
Always. Hey, I've got some gaps in my pop culture knowledge with some of this stuff too. So always a good opportunity to go back and fill some of that in. So,
well, being 14 years older than you, I'll be happy. Yeah. To throw a couple more at you. If you're
okay.
Interested.
Okay. We've talked about Lady Hawk. I think that one's probably going to be coming down the pipe here.
Absolutely.
In a little bit, and some other stuff like that. So looking forward to that. Follow us on Twitter and Instagram @SpoilerWarsPod. My name is Mason Fields. Thank you for listening. Until next time, stay spoilery, everybody.
See ya.